Welcome to Imagine This Podcast, where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all of the excellent and abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you'll see and experience our city and the incredible, vibrant arts and culture community in a new way.
I'm David Lee.
And I'm Mac Antigua. Hey, what's up, David?
We have a very special episode today.
What's crazy is I'm like super jacked. I'm ready to make this happen, but I only have to do 5% of the work on this episode. So that's weird. I'm at the channel.
You're super jacked to make this happen. And this was not even a topic covered in Richie Burke's
Go-Getters podcast. What's up, Richie? Learning from the best. We are excited that this pod is going to be about launching a new pod. We just got Meta.
We had a pod baby.
We got a pod baby. Me and you having pod babies.
I reject that description.
Hey, by the way, the one just joining us right now is the host of the newest podcast on the Imagine MKE podcast network called MKE Arts Forward. Or is it Arts Forward MKE?
Arts Forward.
Which one is it? Which one is it? Hey, it's Lindsay Sheridan. Lindsay, which one is it? Lindsay,
welcome.
Which one is it?
Yeah, it's Arts Forward MKE.
That's right. That's why you're on the show right now to set us up. All right, so Lindsay is the Director of Marketing and Public Relations at Imagine MKE, and in addition to that, she's the new host of this show. And so, Lindsay, welcome. Congratulations. We're excited for you. Tell us what the show is about.
Well, it's been a long time coming. Before the pandemic hit, I recorded about 6 episodes with artists that we featured in a video that we released on 414 Day. You might have seen it. And wanted to do a deeper dive into their stories. And that will be the beginning of a new podcast that seeks to do deep dives into the stories of Milwaukee-based artists. So we're looking at a podcast that spans past, present, and future. I'm interested in artists' origin stories, right? So what's their Milwaukee origin story? What's their early artistic memories that really were formative in them becoming professional artists or professional arts administrators? What are they up to now that's exciting and future oriented for the city? And then also in general, what do they think the future of the city is and how can arts contribute to that? So each episode follows that model and hopefully provides some moments of insight and beauty and grace and you know, I'm just trying to be Krista Tippett, really, when you come down to it.
Yeah. So. It's a blatant Krista Tippett cover pod.
It's a blatant cover pod
of Krista Tippett. Yeah. Krista Tippett tribute pod. You know, even if you grab 70%, 5% of that Tippett action, that's 75% better than what me and David put out. So, I mean, you're already there. So, that's awesome.
Just 5% of that Tippett action.
That would be a lot.
75% of what we put out.
That's really awesome. And I think for those who, when you listen to Imagine This Podcast, me and David are pretty breezy and we touch a lot of things, but I think what's exciting and what's really cool about your podcast is the depth that you get to go to and really hearing that. So we're excited about that. And, just tell us a bit about how it's going to be published, or can you give us a sense of the schedule and all that?
Yeah. So this first episode is, I'm really just taking advantage of that Imagine This Podcast shine, you know. So you can find it here, but you can also go find my podcast named Arts Forward MKE and subscribe so that when new episodes come out on Thursdays, you'll be the first to know. Yeah, hopefully. Now we're in a competition. I'm hoping that, you know, within 2 months that my listenership exceeds yours. So.
Wow. The gauntlet has been thrown down.
Well, here's the thing, though, right? In the culture of joyful abundance, if you can get to 225 U.S. arts podcast, we will celebrate you. We'll buy you a cake.
Yeah. We'll in fact acknowledge your podcast and our podcast all the time as, you know, we'll be the intercontinental champ. You'll be the world champ. Like you get there. David, could you speak just a little bit about, you know, the notion of why we're going to release podcasts? Because the world definitely doesn't have enough podcasts, but can you speak to, again, just sort of the thinking behind what we're trying to do with this?
Yeah. You know, part of our goal, right, is to surround the people in Milwaukee, the art supporters in Milwaukee, with incredible content that helps them get informed about all of the great abundance in our city, gets them to know their artists, better in a deeper way and in ways that they may not have had the opportunity to get to know them before. And we just want to make sure that all of the content we're putting out sort of helps to advance that notion that Milwaukee is going to be the next great American art city going into the second decade of the new millennium.
Lindsay, just, you know, before we head into yours, the last question I have for you is just what have you discovered about your process or yourself, or what has been a surprise, or just, you know, maybe what are some things now that you've cut these episodes that you're actually maybe looking forward to as you cut some more episodes?
Yeah, I think, you know, maybe in contrast to this conversation, that my my episodes are a little bit slower moving, and that to see the I think to see like a bit of a moment of spark or revelation when people think back to, for example, what an early arts memory is that really shaped them is really lovely. I don't think we spend a lot of time dwelling in what that original spark was that got us inspired for the rest of our lives. And so it's really beautiful to be able to see that. And really wonderful to be offering up questions that get at these artists and arts leaders, really envisioning the future of the city and shaping the future of the city as we believe they should be. So giving them space to have that visioning is really powerful as well.
I think what's really interesting, sort of hearing you talk about the vision for this podcast, is for your show to go real deep, and I'm really excited to listen to this episode coming up. Contrasted with the very short time frame in which we give our guests an opportunity to be the arts and cultures are on Imagine This podcast, I think it's a really interesting balance, right? You have the sort of depth with your show, and then you have the kind of quick hit with the arts and cultures are question in our show. So hopefully we can shape all of this incredible content into a future-facing arts agenda, and that's I think the mm-hmm. the ultimate goal of creating these different content streams for us. It's very exciting.
Well, a wise a wise poet once said, "Don't bore us, get to the chorus." After the break, we're excited to present to you Arts Forward MKE.
And I'll be welcoming Poet Laureate Dasha Kelly Hamilton for the first one. So thanks for helping me set it up, guys.
Hit the theme music.
Here today with Dasha Kelly Hamilton, writer, performance artist, creative change agent, social entrepreneur, a woman of many talents. Thank you so much for being here today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So I'm going to start our conversation with a question that I'm beginning all of these artists' interviews with to set the tone. So can you tell me, do you remember a time early in life that you experienced art in a way that impacted you deeply, that stuck with you?
I'm trying to trace back to an earliest memory, but I think the challenge is art has always impacted me deeply. And if anything, it's been more my relationship with art. And from the very early days, it was being able to make art. I don't know that I would have called it art. I was making stuff. Mm-hmm. So it was crayons, of course, we all start there, but it was every possible make it kit, from the clay to latch hook to sewing and all the various types of paints and puzzles. And my parents just knew that one kept me quiet. and I just liked that process of going from I don't know to this finished thing, this tower of pencils, this tangle of thread and fabric that you may call sewing. Yeah. And that has always been something that has excited me, even at the very, very beginning, was from writing stories, to have a blank piece of paper and imagine literally what if, and then what, and then what, and then what, and then what some more. So it's always been something that excited me. I would say something that super early, and I recently brought this up, someone was talking about an oboe, and I did choir on the other side of things, but I don't know much of, I mean, I know I have a pedestrian's knowledge of orchestra and instruments and whatnot, and It was talking to David, in fact. Somehow it came up, and it was something made me think of Peter and the Wolf, made me think of that symphony piece. Mm-hmm. But my introduction to it was the sound these instruments make, and they were aligning them to different characters. So they animated the sound, turned them into, and this is the sound that the fox makes, and this is the instrument that was chosen to animate the bear or whatever the animals were that were in the cartoon. And just remember my brain putting those two together, and my brain gasped, if that were possible. My brain dropped its jaw. It was like, what? And I have a memory of that possibility of those things going together. Mm-hmm. And not only did it go together, and it was a behind the scenes, it made sense. It also, speaking with you now, introduced a thought process that clearly has been embedded, because I take my imagination goes that route from what's possible to through what's practical, connected to what's purposed, and then build out from there. So I would say it's a really long, winding, confusing response, but thinking about it, that would be the one that impressed me that way, that shows up in the way that I live today.
I love that. I remember also in music class in elementary school watching a video of Peter and the Wolf, where it was making those same connections, and how, you know, I can't picture what that video was like, but I can remember the sounds of them making those connections between animals and instruments too. Mm-hmm. That sticks with you. When do you think that process of building and making something out of nothing, when did words and language become a primary mechanism for that for you?
Quite honestly, not until my 20s, maybe even later. I've always put words together, but it wasn't, I didn't appreciate, I would say I didn't appreciate how that exercise could be transferred into everywhere else in my life. It was this isolated experience of what to do with the rest of this glue, and what would make sense with this description, and where else can I go with this story? So there were the way that people will spend time doing watercolors and crosswords and building things in a garage. That was something that was an outlet for me. And in fact, it wasn't until I got to college that I realized that everyone cannot write. I knew that.
You just thought it's inherent.
I just thought that there were people who didn't like it.
Right.
You know, I was the people that grumbled in the class in the seat next to you because of the paper that was due or the grades that they received. Or I just knew that there were people that didn't enjoy it. Mm-hmm. But I was a tutor. So I played volleyball in college. So initially I tutored other student athletes. And then when I stopped playing volleyball, I became a tutor in the center, and I became unofficially the paper girl. So I'm helping people process through their papers. And that was my first writerly experience of trying to explain to someone how what they thought and what they wrote weren't close. Mm-hmm. And for me, the question mark in the side of my head was, how does this happen? So I just started to really appreciate as a skill set, and also as a talent. But even then, it wasn't figuring out what to do with that work. But I would say around that time, I started to see the talent a little bit differently. And when I started doing more work and working with other people that wanted to write, starting to do some classes with young people, and from the gate, it was appreciating the steps that it takes to get from I don't know to a finished anything. Mm-hmm. So around that time, everything swirls into what's possible. I wasn't exactly a teacher and wasn't interested in teaching you stanzas and pentameter, and I wasn't interested in the mechanics of the work. I wanted you to appreciate that you're already brilliant, that your ideas mean something, that we can get from here to there. We don't know what there is exactly, but that doesn't mean that we can't get there. So really focused on the creative process, and that became the baseline for my workshops, my classes, my lectures, my engagement, because I have experienced how people, it's easy to be discouraged based on past grades, the past breakups, the past steps you fell down, all the things that didn't quite work are the things that on one hand are supposed to keep us safe from making those errors in the future. Mm-hmm. but the mindset of there weren't errors. They were just things that you were learning or didn't know how to do yet. So being willing to try that moving forward, reframing the process, the experience of imagining what if, where it's fun, where you're kind of disoriented, not exactly sure what this lady is talking about, why we're writing this, why I have to hum to this stranger, why am I using this set of words, and then, look at this poem that showed up. Oh my goodness, look at this memory that I never thought about. And here it is, the most relevant part of this conversation, because it's taking me to a memory, it's helping me connect with a person. It's just been a magical experience. So I would say it was definitely leaning into what I wanted to accomplish. And I was then able to pull back on these experiences of how people respond to what they're taught, how they're taught, why they're sitting in that chair in the first place. So going back to Peter and the Wolf, it's a thought process of how you choose the right instrument to make a sound, to give a feeling, which are all abstractions, but they are just really concrete initiatives in my head.
Mm-hmm. So I'd love to learn more about the Stillwaters Collective, mm-hmm. which has been around for almost 2 decades. And for those listeners that are not familiar, in short, it applies the craft, the Stillwaters Collective and the workshops and after school programs and whatnot offered to you through it, instill this sense of community and capacity and confidence. Tell us more about the origin of Stillwaters and why you've spoken a little bit to it, but what is it about spoken word and creative writing that uniquely cultivates and builds up our young people?
My introduction to open mics and spoken word, I had a friend that took me to an open mic, and I immediately was energized by what was happening in the room. So there's a person that I don't know who's reading a poem that I've never heard before. The merit of it, I'm shrugging my shoulders right now. I couldn't remember. It didn't impress me in that way, but I was moved by the other human things that were happening, because I'm watching this person. Clearly, this was a difficult story for them to tell, and clearly had made some decisions to push through it. Mm-hmm. The room wanted the person to win. Everyone was listening, and there were snaps and claps and mm-hmms, and it was very church. Mm-hmm. And the writer in me also responded to listening to this original language. So I tell people all the time, I hated poetry. It was the section in English class I didn't understand why we were being tortured with. It was just riddles from dead old white people. And there was literally rhyme, but no reason for how we were going to grow from this work. But being able to hear somebody read their version of a poem in their version of literature in the reality of their life and their cadence with this room, it was amazing. And so from that experience of going into open mics, I went then back and started to learn how to appreciate poetry on the page. And it's definitely a different process than fiction, which is what I grew up gobbling. So that was a learning experience for me. So Stillwaters was acknowledging that process when I was initially invited to come into a classroom. And I'm like, sure? Yes, I can make something happen, mm-hmm. but I also was really mindful. I didn't want to go in like I'm the poetry expert. I've scribbled a couple of poems and I've written a bunch of stories, but I'm not an expert. I'm just good at it. And I think that there's a difference. So I want to honor that. So I'm going to go in and make this experience. In the very first class I went into, I asked the class, so how many of you know you have good ideas? And a third of the room raises their hand.
Wow.
So at first I'm thinking they're shy and I'm new, and I've been in a gazillion classrooms since then. And it's not because I'm new or they're shy. It's so much about how we as humans, and then them as young people in particular, have not been encouraged to think, mm-hmm. have not been encouraged to imagine, have not been instructed on how to get from here to there. I've still had a young man who worked with me for a number. I said, oh my goodness, I hope that you get a job just being handsome, because you're not leaning into anything else right now. And just the ideas that are going to get you out of a corner. And so I've been talking so this work has been showing how creativity above the art itself, whether it's writing poetry or, you know, spitting a poem or doing a dance, the thought process it takes to get from shoulder shrug to this poem is a lot of work, a lot of decisions, a lot of strategy. So that was the heart of how and why I showed up in the classroom, just to engage people, these young people, in their own great ideas. So yes, and poems are going to happen in the process. So those two things, you know, came together, and Stillwaters grew because I couldn't be in all the classrooms. I couldn't be in all the schools. So it went from a class to multiple classes in this one school, to multiple classes in multiple schools, to at our largest, we were in 16 high schools across the city. So it was an opportunity to engage other adult artists and poets that I knew. So initially they were some of our co-facilitators. Adults are hard-headed, so they didn't always deliver into the classroom with what had been asked of them. So you're taking into account the people working in their schedule, and it's not $1 million. And so a lot of learning along the way with there is a heart in terms of a social entrepreneur. There is a an intention in terms of someone who's a teaching artist. So learning that, and didn't have that language at that time, but just knew someone who was a talented poet and available wasn't necessarily the ideal person to be in front of a classroom, guiding them through an experience that is going to ultimately have those young people feeling confident, whether or not their poem is great or not. So there were things that we learned along the way. And a part of that element was being able to fold it into an internship program for the alumni of the program. So there were young people that came to the classes, came to our workshops. We would go into high schools and lead their after school programs. And so we're guiding the young people through conversations, through prompts, through, of course, their first scribbles and edits. And then it's, how do we take this thing you've written and put it on a stage? How do you perform it in with three people next to you? How do you take it from great to amazing? Yeah. And then it was also interscholastic. So the schools are competing against one another. So it was really cool watching how the kids from one high school knew who was dating who at another high school, knew who got into college at another high school, and so on and so on. And fast forward, many of them are still connected. Wow. So knowing that there was this, we were able to knit together this network of young minds that wouldn't have connected through any other means. So if you're not on the basketball team, or you're not in a traditional leadership role, and all the things and ways we expect to see teenagers show up, here is this little sliver of space where you get to come bring that knotted poem from math class and read it out loud, or you fit in everywhere and nowhere. But so you get to come here and listen to other kids that look like you, sound like you, look nothing like you, smell nothing like you, but all of you are in this room together. And it was amazing watching that unfold. So it's the same thing that worked in the adult rooms was working with the young people. Over time, it unfolded where we have a fellowship with our young adults that came out, to where we were able to use this creative process and this experience and shape them into leaders, where they were doing presentations at City Hall. They are leading, you know, putting together initiatives to raise awareness about women's health. So all types of projects and programs birthed out of this network of these young people who are young leaders in the city now. And a lot of them, too, are just young folks figuring it out, like we all have been, and I believe in my heart I still am. So ultimately, Stillwaters has grown to a space, and we have things in place for adults who are creatives and doing fellowship projects with them, where, again, it boils down to the conversation of, I ask the same question, how many of you know you have great ideas? And reminding people that creativity is about creating something that wasn't there before. That's a shortcut to your job. That's a dish that should not have pine nuts in it, but somehow was delicious anyway. That is an outfit that shouldn't have the patterns match, but you made it work. So creativity is figuring out how to get that report done and still get, you know, still make your vacation flight. All of those things are how our brains work. Now, being an artist is another discussion. I mean, that's under the umbrella of creativity. But if we can stay focused on what you're capable of, you know, my daughter's a sophomore in college right now, and what I'm loving at this moment in her time of her life is for her experiencing that it's not a theory, that she has everything that she needs to figure out everything that she needs. And to have been in working with young people and not young people, and to be able to almost almost in my heart document when that is not a part of a person's construction.
Sure.
That yeah. they are, that they have the capacity and the capability to figure things out. Mm-hmm. Which leads to a lot of under-celebrated lives, I would say. So Stillwaters does all of those pieces, and we do that through getting people in the same room and they're sharing their poems. We do that through, every April is National Poetry Month. So we started bringing this national challenge to the city where it's 30-30. It's like a marathon. Can you write a poem every day? Oh, I've only finished the whole month once. So by the time you get to the teens, it's haikus and you're panting heavily. But it has been an invitation and a platform to get people in a room around a conversation in unique ways. It has been a tool to engage people in their own lives, in their own thought processes. So it's from open mics, we do residencies. I've done workshops and trainings at conferences. I've done gone and had a room full of executives and used the same process. It was in terms of a workshop about a writing technique. And because I'm focused on process, I'm able to use the same session. And we have now a conversation about your bias. Flip it again, and we're able to have a facilitated discussion about how you're engaging your teams or your leaders or how we're valuing one another's stories and using this art as a place to jump, as a jump off point. But it's truly, truly is limitless of where you can go with the intention of wanting to get somewhere. And again, we don't know where is, but we know it's over there. It's over there where understanding is, or it's over there where self-care is, or it's back behind us where protest is. But we can get there if we just lay some things, some ifs on the table and follow them.
It sounds like Stillwaters has had such a wonderful impact over 20 years on this city. And I wonder if you can share with us a little bit more about your own personal Milwaukee origin story. Are you from here or did you move here? Mm-hmm. What keeps you here? What made you stay?
Sigh. this is home. I'm originally from Milwaukee. I'm an Army brat. So Milwaukee is where I was born. St. Joseph's Hospital. My parents were born here. My sister was born here. And my father was commissioned in the military when I was four. So he was in prior to that, but that's when we actually started moving. So from four until now, it's been every 3-4 years, my family and I, we moved someplace different. So Milwaukee was where we came back between tours, sure. or we came back for the summers if we were on the continent. And it's always held this place. It's where my grandmothers lived where the Ambrosia Factory was. So there are just these emblems that I held, that held Milwaukee for me. So Milwaukee was a place and it was my permanent address. And I moved back in my late 20s. So I've learned the city like a transplant. Mm-hmm. So with that, it's coming back going, you know, this is weird, right? You know, we should be able to travel all over the city, right? Mm-hmm. You know that art is not evil, right? And just this squinted face for many, many years in returning to the city of, one, as a young professional wanting to navigate and pass out the business cards and do all the after work things and in establishing myself and getting, of course, a sense of who and what the city was about, I just felt and found myself always wanting, and not so much wanting more, but wanting something. And so it was much easier to just kind of cocoon myself in work that mattered to me with people around me that got my work, that had the same intention with how they wanted to navigate the world and their work. Was also learning how to follow opportunities that didn't entirely make sense. I mean, my background is in marketing and public relations. What am I doing teaching a poetry class? That's makes no sense, except words have always been how I navigate this place called Earth. so that was my work. So I came back to the city, and I was working at NPR and marketing, and I'd done some writing. By this point, I'd released a novella. Mm. And so I've got teachers, oh, I heard that you were, air quotes, real author. Could you come? And that's where it started. So all these things were happening at the same time. You get, being invited to visit classrooms, starting an open mic at a bar that my ex and I owned at the time, mm-hmm. and just building out this journey, this experience. So I didn't set out to make Stillwaters what it is. It was do this project, get funding for that project, make that. And then I looked over my shoulder one day and there were thousands of kids and 16 programs and initiatives and things that had happened, a lot of years put into it. So it really mm-hmm. was, it has entirely been a journey of love and imagination. Mm-hmm. So in between that, I've been writing and scribbling and always looking at ways to, again, care for me, because I still am into indoor plumbing and want a roof and need to eat and right. also need to make sure that I'm creating things. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these years have been creating this community, has been creating ways and places for us to be heard. And us would be artists, us would be people of color, us would be the folks who are sparkly in different ways. Us would be people who don't look or live anything like me, but I know that this 15-year-old kid needs a place to be heard. I know that this veteran is going to be a different kind of whole after we have this retreat space together. So it's really, I've been humbled and honored by the range of places and people who have invited me into their work mm-hmm. and into their spaces. And a couple of years ago, I had a colleague point out, you know, I really am moved by your practice. And she said some other words, but I just was stuck there. I hovered there and I went, I am grateful for that word. Because I've had someone tell me, you know, you're a minister. Sort of, no. I get the sentiment in it, but the idea that this as a practice really resonated with me. So that has definitely been my journey, because it's all the things. You know, I've taken now to calling myself a creative change agent, because it's a short, I still have to go back and explain it, because people look and go, what? What does that mean?
Right.
But it's different from seeing it written and you know, I'm a writer and a facilitator and an educator and a performer and program analyst and a strategic planner and. But all of them,
right,
all of them are on the axis of wanting to be an agent of change. Mm-hmm. And creatively is how I go about doing it.
What a beautiful word practice is in that sense, because it conveys that you are both a practitioner and an expert, but also perhaps still learning and evolving, right?
Most definitely.
It's a great word. Yeah. So you've got some pretty impressive titles from the city of Milwaukee. You were Artist of the Year in 2016, and you were inaugurated as Milwaukee's 11th Poet Laureate in 2019, and that period of being Poet Laureate runs for a couple of years.
Two years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So talk to us more about what did achieving these mean to you personally, and what responsibilities and opportunities now that you're in the middle of this Poet Laureate title, what does that bring for you?
Mm-hmm. The Artist of the Year award, I won that year. Della Wells and I shared the honor, and it was exciting to be the whirlwind of the announcement and to have this as an acknowledgement. And at this, and I was able to share, in especially at that time, not that it wouldn't be different today, but especially in that particular year, I was able to recognize that the work was for my personal work, but also this outreach work. That is an art. That is an intentional craft in terms of, again, making space and building platforms and honoring voices and leveraging people's stories unto themselves, right? So I celebrated the totality of that it just wasn't, you know, because of my book or my poems, that it was that and the work that I was doing in the city. So, and I looked at it that way. And being able to be selected as the Poet Laureate was a deeper achievement, because it came to me. Mm. And this is a city that can make you reconsider yourselves in unnecessary ways. Mm. So I was just telling someone just this past weekend, I'm kind of amazing, right?
Yeah.
And if I have moments of, I don't know, folks who are a little bit less amazing in this city, I know how I am challenged, I struggle, and I have a network, and I have a support system. I have a lot of things, and it's really hard. It's really hard to exist outside of a get up and go to this corner office and don't ask or say anything paradigm of a city. I've never been any of those things. And then add some, and it's difficult. So I feel that I've gotten to this to be able to be in this seat, to have this conversation with you in spite of it all and not because of it all. And so with that, the idea of persevering, you just really have to be intentional about your why, I think. So in being able to get a phone call, about setting up this conference, and what was interesting is I thought we were going to talk about something else because I'd made, there was a whole nother email thread to set up this, a phone call about a writing competition, this writing project. And so then in another email thread to set up this phone conference, oh my goodness, the deputy is on board. They are really about this writing contest. This is amazing. They're going to say yes. And so to lead off, hey, we have had this conversation, had this committee, we revamped, and after so many years of wanting it, because the library staff isn't involved in the selection, it's an external process. So they said it was to hear the feedback afterwards that they every round they're rooting and they're cheering, and oh, she didn't get it again. to be selected, and for me, I didn't have to tap dance. I didn't have to present yet another collection of all of my work and accolades. I don't like to lean on what people do and don't deserve, but I will confidently and without reservation say I've certainly earned this space.
Absolutely.
And to not have to make the city give it to me with all, if you've heard all that attitude in my voice, felt amazing.
Yeah.
So that was incredible. A high, high compliment and an honor and something that I'm enjoying thoroughly, just this relationship. And so the work that we're going to do, my platform will be to host conversations. Surprise, right? we're going to host a series of something I'm calling poemologues. So it's an element of a course that I taught at Mount Mary a few years ago. And it's a facilitation tool to get us on a really authentic discussion. There's no literary analysis. We're not asking you to please don't write any poems. Go find a poem. Yeah. So when we talk about body, place, freedom, and power. As an example, when we did the course for body, one of the women in my class, she was grandmother range, and she brought in a poem about periods. And the instructions were, you're going to post this poem, but more importantly, give me 100 words of why you picked this poem. So she was explaining how in her day, this wasn't even anything that you talked about, right? And this day, how she is both, she both celebrates and is concerned with how open women are. And so you can imagine generations of women in this room and a couple of guys, but we're talking about, all the way from, yes, you hid that little tampon in your backpack and you let no one ever see it. To now I've got students who are literally holding period parties, right? And everything in the middle. So it was really interesting, just this stamp of generations. And yes, on one hand, it's an easy cliche or it's an easy categorization, but in real time, when we showed up on this planet based on what was being taught, it was just a really great conversation. Yeah. So that will be the theme. We'll do those topics. Wonderful. We'll do them in branches across the city. We'll do like a people's anthology of all the different poems that they bring in from their favorite poets, wherever those folks are. Yeah. But mostly we're going to talk.
That sounds wonderful. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like a piece of the bigger puzzle that I'd love to dive into another program that you're involved in, and in that from Imagine's perspective, we want artists to be at all these tables facilitating conversations woven into the civic fabric of our city, and that we'll all be the better for it. That concept is so central to your work, and one of the outputs of that has been the Creative in Residence program at Stillwaters, an immersive experience in cultural organizing and placemaking and art intervention programming. And last year was the first year of this, correct?
Yes.
And you partnered with 11 local artists to be in residence and deliver amazing programming in 12 different neighborhoods. So tell us more about that.
It was amazing watching them go, watching them get up and go. The concept came through in knowing the invitations that I've personally received and seeing projects that have happened around the city in the genesis and evolution of from the Alliance to CAM to Imagine MKE to being able to travel around the country and know and just be aware of other initiatives that are happening through the lens of art, through the initiative of creatives and creative organizations, and looking around at the tables that I was sitting at, and even looking at the minutes of tables I had not been invited to sit at, I just know there are a lot of creatives and artists in this city. Had they been invited to said tables, could have produced something amazing. And I also know, and I've had conversations with some of these amazing artists and have invited them to some of these tables to which they have not shown up because what? Mm-hmm. What is that? And what are you talking about? And
there's not a clear path.
There's not a clear understanding. And again, remember, this is not a city that has always encouraged risks and thinking, working outside the box. So it's an interesting conundrum to have a creative community who is afraid to be creative. Mm-hmm. But being as creative as they should be, they've had to leave the city. They're underemployed and struggling in ways that starving artists was never intended to mean. Mm-hmm. And or just as a craft, as a conversation, as a population, the city, because it has not encouraged creativity, doesn't know how to receive this resource, doesn't know how to access and engage these folks. So instead, you're just that weird cousin who likes to go to see live music all the time.
Right.
So knowing that these two, I can't even call them extremes, but these two mindsets exist in this city at a time when it doesn't have to be. So looked into creating a day where we were able to say, this is what creative placemaking is. This is what cultural organizing is. This is what art intervention looks like. Mm-hmm. And this is what's possible. So we started with a symposium. We partnered with Greater Milwaukee Foundation to do the Creative Exponential. And the invitation was, not only is this going to be exponential in your work as a creative, as an artist, in your invoices, in the city impact, it's more than just doing murals, love murals, but who else can be a part of this discussion? Right. So we did this full day. We brought in practitioners from across the country, academics, political or community organizers, because there is an overlap in the endeavor.
Definitely.
We brought in someone who runs an international association of residencies. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, it says, now that you've heard all of this, we've got an opportunity for you. Mm-hmm. We have 7 topics, 12 neighborhoods. What's one idea you would do to activate this question, activate this conversation? And we got these submissions, the ideas were outstanding. And so each of these creatives they had a coach on how to do neighborhood development outreach, how to do social media, worked with them specifically on how to shape their idea into an initiative. Said, no, that's going to take 3 years. You only have this summer. Okay, wait, we can probably look at this differently and that. And they brought them together for them all to work together on. Everyone at some point had to take a pivot from their mm-hmm. original idea, because that's just the nature of doing outreach work. So spent the summer of activating these concepts and getting them engaged in this work. And we had a recent college graduate and a recent retiree. We covered 12 different neighborhoods throughout all the corners of the city. I was impressed with their tenacity, because it's across the board too. It's also unfamiliar. Mm-hmm. So you're going to do a lot of things that seem that they should be second nature. And they're, again, they're all transferable skills, but you're doing a whole campaign, mm-hmm. and you're doing it in a neighborhood where you don't know anyone and no one necessarily knows you. And there right. is an etiquette and an ethics into how you enter a neighborhood that doesn't belong to you. So teaching those steps. And so on this end of things, and at the end of it, we had an amazing experience of what they learned about the partnerships and experiences they had in the neighborhoods. And we're looking now in terms of building that out. So the next half is how do we create an onboarding experience for the neighborhoods and for our content partners. Mm-hmm. So we had content partners that came on. Imagining KE was one of them. They were like, this looks great. We don't know what's going to happen, but we know that the intention is to build capacity of our creatives in this city. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do it in a neighborhood, and we're going to address socially relevant discussions. We're in. Mm-hmm. We're on. Mm-hmm. We'll figure it out. So we're at the part now of, again, is putting in processes in place. So I'm really excited about what these creatives came up with in neighborhoods, enjoyed being engaged in this unique way. A lot of times these initiatives happen and it's extractive. You know, because we have a research initiative we're doing, because we want to know about blah, 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 blah.
Right.
We package it as coming in, doing a thing with the neighborhood, but it's really not about the neighborhood. And in this endeavor, it was about the creatives building their skill set on how we could ultimately do things more and better,
yeah,
and more authentically in the neighborhood. So we really appreciate everyone who I call this group a cohort zero.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's still in a lot of ways a pilot, but it went fantastically, and our partners saw a lot, got a lot of new ideas for them. So we're in discussions now of plotting it out. So we'll have an official cohort one.
I love it. Mm-hmm. It's so exciting to hear more about and to think about how essential that mindset is of integrating creatives into the social fabric and social change in our city. What a great opportunity Milwaukee has in the work of you and organizations like Still Waters to elevate that to be central to what we're about as a city, right?
Yes.
It's so exciting, and I'm sure does not come easily. It comes out of 20 years of practice of you and your colleagues in Stillwaters getting to a point where perhaps those you needed to convince to see the value in it finally see the value. So it's thrilling to learn more about it from
you.
Thank
you for that. I needed that today.
Yeah. So speaking of being lucky, we're very lucky to have your voice reading Life in Motion as a central feature of this video we're going to release. That's a celebratory arts and culture in Milwaukee sort of showpiece that we can put out there to remind people that the arts are really central to our city. So I would love to just ask you a little bit more about the poem Life in Motion. It's so beautiful. Our office, we tear up when we read it. You know, it's the story of individuals, but it's also the story of Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us more about the piece, the origin of it, how it began?
I will definitely say it's a composite. So there wasn't a particular incident or a specific person, but just that collective feeling of my daughter, when she gets frustrated, we just resort to sound effects. You know, sometimes it's the words don't, you know, as a wordsmith, the words don't come together and do the things that you need. And so emotionally, it can be that feeling of going through motions, but you don't see them as going through the motions. You're following this template that was laid out for you, or you are responding to instructions that sounded like they were intended for you. And the biggest part of that is all of us hold on to these old notes with the things that didn't get checked off and the checkoffs that shouldn't have happened. And that is what we spend time measuring ourselves against, all the things we did and didn't do. Yeah. And it's acknowledging that in an individual and in each of us doing that, that's what we look like together. And when that's what we look like together, here's where we're not going. Mm-hmm. So just this reminder that, so one of the lines I like particularly is, coast be not ocean, edge be not your end. Mm-hmm. So you do have limitations, just for nothing else, by the measure of being immortal, or living where you live, or having the account that you have, or the understanding of a language that you don't. I mean, you have limitations, and that's just all they are, limitations on those particular dynamics that are around you. But that doesn't, in the challenges that are in front of you, an ocean's worth even, is not your end. It's where those two pieces meet. Your limitations and your challenges, there's literally this shoreline where they meet. And that's all that delineates, is where those two things meet. Mm-hmm. So just reminding that there's still so much more. And not to say that we don't want to address the limitations and oceans and challenges and obstacles, but that's not all that you are. That's not all that we are. And there's even in that a beauty in finding that balance of where to put your toes. Yeah. So that's what the piece was hoping to give to folks, an acknowledgement of things that are difficult, of parts of us that are not picturesque, and still all of it's perfect.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And it reminds me of hearing from an artist once talk about a metaphor of where ecosystems meet and the creativity within those, you know, like a forest meeting a prairie, and the sort of life that can only exist in that creative zone in between things. And I just thank you for reminding me of that in drawing this metaphor of the coast and those intersections. And
sure.
Yeah. So, Dasha, what do you think the future looks like for Milwaukee's arts and culture at large? From your perspective, where are we headed? What are our strengths or areas for growth?
I don't know. Imagine MKE, what y'all gonna do?
Fair enough.
What y'all gonna do? We've done what we can. But honestly, that is going to be a component to it, of having an infrastructure in place. Even better, because I'm a writer, you'll appreciate this. You're like a trellis, right? Mm-hmm. So the rose vines, cucumbers, I don't garden, but the things that grow up, they need a trellis. They need something to cling to, and then that creates the structure for folks to climb and grow out and bloom. Yeah. Otherwise, you just got a bunch of really amazing vegetables rotting on the ground. You know, roses that won't get to their full bloom. So that, I believe, is what feels like is happening from organizations like Imagine MKE, from artists and creatives who have moved into the city and came into the city and looked around and went, what are y'all doing? And just went to work and putting in systems that actually make sense and are a little bit more equitable. Mm-hmm. It's also young people who are, I call them neo-grown, who are now in their neo-grown years, also with an attitude of, what are y'all doing? Mm-hmm. This is whack. We're going to do something different. And claiming spaces for themselves. And not only are they claiming spaces for themselves, but they're claiming space and making sure when they get there, they're leaving a seat open for somebody in their peer group, or in their network, which is an element that as a city we've missed. So everyone with this mindset of there's only one crumb from that big old pie up there, and we all have to fight over it. We've just proven time and time again, there's plenty of pie, plenty of cake, plenty of all the metaphors for everybody to be fed.
Yeah.
So those things happening, also then it invites a different audacity. It invites other people to come, other creatives to come, and then you have art, culture, creativity that's just present. Mm-hmm. I'm doing some work, for example, at a venue, and they said we want it to be where arts and culture is just part of what we do. It's and my interpretation and my feedback to them was, my proposal then are, these are the events that I would recommend, or these are the efforts that I would recommend that aren't really events. Mm-hmm. So otherwise, people can still mentally separate the calendar date where the dance happens, poetry happens, the author comes, the thing happens, But if you just look up from lunch one day and then there's someone painting, or if you are just coming through to get your whatever after work and here there's a cooking dim, it suggests that you should expect this, that mm-hmm. this is normal. Mm-hmm. So that as a comparison, you know, getting things and people and mindsets and programs in place and these trellises where creativity is expected mm-hmm. And get people then what we'll be able to push the envelope. You mean we can be creative beyond a mural? Yes. Yes, Sally, you can. And again, murals, we need to have them, and the process it takes to get that art on the wall does all the things.
Right.
But there, it goes back to inviting creativity mm-hmm. and then artists into a space invites all of us to be human. Mm-hmm. Because if it were just a matter of, again, crossing off those check boxes, all of us who are check boxer crosser offerers we'd be happy and right. the city would be great, but right. we need some humanity in this place yeah. and so ways that we can absorb other people's ideas and stories. Mm. So with that being said, I think that it's we've always had the talent here. We've had the creativity has been here, but we've had to hide, or there's not been a place to yeah. exercise it, or more than importantly, not a place to build on it and still be able to eat.
Yeah.
Right. So having these things in place where it changes people's relationship, expands people's practical outlet in terms of being able to practice their craft and their art will change the way people receive it. Mm-hmm. So we're at the beginning of a new beginning. Mm-hmm. We still have a lot of work to do, but
yeah.
These new initiatives, they're not new. Let me scratch that. These advancements right. of long-standing initiatives and hopes and dreams, it feels good.
Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. I'm just jazzed to keep that trellis image in mind and being a piece of that mm-hmm. in the work that That's we do every missing. Day. It's beautiful. Missing. Yeah, yeah.
That and the co-op. That's the other thing that artists need.
Oh yeah,
telling, I don't know how many, years. So for example, I cannot possibly keep my graphic designer, I can't keep her
right.
afloat.
Right.
But if there were a co-op, you know, this co-op office, however the language for a year, mm-hmm. right? So you may mm-hmm. have two graphic designers, three social media people, somebody that does contracts. It doesn't need a whole lot.
Yeah.
Three people to do admin, help with email. However those folks are selected, then they have a contract for a year or two. Two sounds good. Mm-hmm. And that means whoever is a member of or whoever is a card-carrying artist, whatever you folks come up with, then I have access to that person.
Mm-hmm.
And so whatever I woulda, shoulda, coulda paid, these independent professionals are eating yeah. and doing work that they love. It's creating a resource and a service for so many small arts groups and artists mm-hmm. who don't have the resources to yeah. have their, and let me be clear. I don't have a graphic designer. I've got someone I know who's great at graphic design
right.
who
right,
I
right,
have
right.
kept in my phone for years and years and years. but just there are ways to, again, this trellis put systems in place that address the things that people need. Mm-hmm. And those minds seem to be coming to the table and the resources that are needed to make those things happen.
I love that. I've been thinking about that as well and hadn't put the name co-op to it, but it makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's such an opportunity for us to find a way to get those tools to the individual artists, to the smaller organizations that need them and systemize the process in which they need to go out into the wind and
exactly.
try and find it on their own and at a low rate, you know, we can do better.
When I was putting together the second version of my Making Cake show, the fact that I had the thought, oh, I know, I'll just teach myself animation should not have happened.
No.
Should not.
So much effort to learn.
Should not have happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't teach myself animation. It didn't work out.
So to close out, I'd love to invite you to just make a shout out, celebrate, lift up something in Milwaukee's arts and culture scene that you're excited about right now. Could be a person, a place, mm-hmm. an org.
Two. I'm going to do two.
Mm-hmm.
So one, I'm going to shout out all of the creatives and the partners in this Creatives in Residence project won the example that these partnerships proved, you know, not suggested, not hoped for, proved was possible, from inviting a creative to come up with a way to have a conversation about fatherhood, and super baby daddies happens, mm-hmm. to invite a creative to highlight an issue of food deserts and food cartography, video sketch notes happen, wow. And projects on and on and on. So I'm excited about what happened and what those partnerships can prove to be. And I'm also excited about there's a podcast, though the podcast community in the city is growing. It's not new, but it's growing. So difference being, you know, there've been folks out here been at this for a long time, but to see more people that are trying. And I'm thinking right now about these three young brothers who have started a podcast called Out of Pocket. Okay. And one is presently taking courses at MATC, learning about the engineering game. Another one is a student at UWM. The third, I believe, is a working man, but they're all neo-grown. They're all in their late teens, early 20s. So that as an example of a mindset that decided, you know what, we're going to figure this out. We're going to, one just got a job at Best Buy so he can get the discounts on whatever equipment they're going to need, sure, right? Sure. So the intention that they have, some of it's that youthful exuberance because the whole world is yours. Absolutely, mm-hmm. young men, yes, yes, go get it. but also that they're reaching out to, you know, just watching them work, and they're reaching out to folks who are already in the podcast community. They're reaching out to other engineers that they can partner with, not just teach me how to do this, but I want to learn how to do this, and I also want to do something with you. Mm-hmm. So I've, again, had the pleasure of watching a lot of young people transition themselves into less than young people. Mm-hmm. And it's just another reminder of what's happening and what has been happening. But I think they've come along at a time where we're really going to see a lot more of these kind of spirits and initiatives, bravery and creativity that's going to be the bomb of this city. So they are an example of what I'm excited about coming forward. It's a new but not new mindset and a willingness to imagine what happens forward.
Fantastic. Well, you are amazing, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today. Thank you, Dasha.
You're welcome. Thank you for that.
Thanks for listening, folks. To stay in touch with and learn more about Dasha's work, head over to www.dashakelly.com. Remember, this is the first episode of my all-new show, so be sure to subscribe by searching Arts Forward MKE on your favorite podcast listening platform, or go to imaginemke.org/podcast. Next week's interview will be with artist Ken Brown. You won't want to miss it. And as always, make sure to subscribe to, rate, and review Imagine This Podcast wherever you get your pods. Special shout out to musician Amanda Huff for the use of her song Carolines, which you're listening to now. Be well, friends.